understand what the problem is here.
With Carmichael Dave, Katie Christensen, and Nate Goodyear.
New morning, team.
Put the top down. Rev your engine.
Say, what goes on this morning?
Welcome to the drive.
I don't know if I want to say, wow, I really respect that about you, or if I want to say, gosh, that is so stupid.
Come on, man. Wake the up. The drive. The drive.
He needs to shut his mouth.
Here we go with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
That keg is almost tapped.
Yeah.
And they're going to get every last drop out of it.
Broadcasting live from the Coors Light Studios. Coors Light, with great beer comes great responsibility. Now the drive continues with Dave, Katie, and Nate.
It's 8:04. Time to save at Hot Tub Supercenter. Call 315-TUBS or visit jacuzziofsacramento.com. Some text cleaning up what we talked about in the last segment.
Well, and I want to say something real
Please
fast.
Do.
Yeah, we were talking about the amount of money that's gambled each year on the NFL and college football combined. And I said I thought it was $98 billion. It's $93 billion. One of the people on Twitter sent me the article.
Way to
and
go, dummy.
And I mean, yeah, plus or Come minus on. $5 billion when we're talking about the billions. It's kind of nickels and dimes in that sense, but the thing is, it's illegally gambled, and that's by all of these fans. This is not in Vegas. This is through the FanDuel, like whatever, all these little sites where people can gamble. But that's a lot of freaking money.
Mm-hmm.
What is our deficit right now?
Do you know? A lot.
It's a trillion something, but I don't know. I think I feel like $93 billion would make a dent in it. Yeah.
So instead of everybody betting, they just donate it towards the deficit.
Yeah, give up your money to the government.
Thanks,
That's
Obama.
Exactly what I'm saying.
Appreciate right? that.
That's not what I'm saying.
What was I going to say to you? Cleaning up from the last.
Text line.
Thank you. Nope, not reading that. Nope, not. Okay, more ridiculous. Soccer coaches in suits or baseball managers in full uniform.
That's the thing that gets me, too.
Full uniforms, because Dusty Baker still wears wristbands. And why?
We have so much for your fashion police segment. So much to get into.
Here's Coach Peter Carroll, formerly of USC, now with the Seahawks, about Nate Robinson's tryouts.
You had Nate Robinson in for a workout yesterday?
Yeah.
How did that go?
He looked really quick, caught the ball really well. He's an amazing athlete.
Did you look at him at a specific position?
Yes.
For now, does he just kind of remain on the radar, or is there a way to categorize?
Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do. You know, he's getting ready for whatever comes next in hoops as well. He's trying to figure out what he's going to do, whether he's going to be in the NBA or be overseas playing or whatever. And so football is an option that he wants to investigate. And he's a great kid. I've known him for a long time, you know, way back when, and always loved the kid. And excited to give him a chance to see where this all fits together for him. And we'll find out down the road.
But, Pete, is there a shot?
I think it's all but impossible. You know, it's as hard as you could possibly get. And he's 32, you know, as well. So I don't know if anybody could do it. But if anybody could, it might be Nate. He's got versatile an athlete and that great a competitor.
The best thing about sound, about hearing the sound versus reading the quote, is you get all the information you need out of the sound. The words are great when you read it on paper, but the intent is completely behind the sound and the voice. And man, that's just saying, Nate, I've known you for a long time. You're a good kid. Need to give it up.
He's trying to be polite.
Yeah.
Way to work hard, Nate.
But here's the thing. With guys like Nate Robinson, they don't understand that.
No.
They don't understand that at all. They need someone to really take them, you know, by the shoulders, look them dead in the eye and be like, there's no shot for you, man.
Dude, you're crazy.
There's no shot. And he's still going to be like, I don't get it. You're going to have to say it to him three or four times.
He's not going
to
see it.
So he doesn't understand subtleties.
I guess that's all. I mean, I know he's at least got a background in football, so he would want to go that route. So that makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's not like he's trying to play soccer and has no background.
But see, that's what I was going to say. Like, if you're 32-year-old Nate Robinson, why do you not look at something like that and say, you know what, maybe I could compete there. I am a tremendous athlete. I know I'm the size to compete at that. The professional level of soccer in this country is not even close to what it is. Like, if
you're comparing it to football.
Right. Like, I mean, it's not the same level. There are a lot more amateur possibilities too. That seems
I'm
like
sure
the type
Sac
of thing
Republic would give him a try.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that seems like the type of thing. If Nate Robinson said, hey, I want to try soccer, like he could get a check doing that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
football is not the tree to be barking at.
Just for the fact that they can take him to a bunch of autograph signings and make money off of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Brian Geltzeiler is going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about the NBA Game 6 tonight. LeBron James was asked, on tonight being the one-year anniversary of Golden State winning the title in Cleveland. Yeah, how about that?
It's 1 year to the day tomorrow that the Warriors won in Game 6 in this building. Do you guys take anything from not wanting to see that trophy hoisted in your building again?
No, I mean, I don't think we even thought about it. There's always 1 year to date of something.
Lie.
You said that about anything. I mean, yesterday was 1 year to date, then my son turned 8, and yesterday he turned 9. So that happens every year. It was 1 year to date of something. So we don't think about that stuff. We just get prepared to play.
I'm calling bull crap on that.
When you hear, when you see reports yesterday, like now I forget who it was, but some NBA writer got to Cleveland, got his Uber, and the driver straight up said, like, yeah, we call the visiting locker room here the champagne room.
Oh. Okay, did you guys hear this story yesterday?
Hold on. I just want to finish on this quote before we move on.
Okay.
Because you shouldn't. Media has to ask questions. I get it. And I think media gets killed a lot for asking questions that a lot of times people are interested in. But what is LeBron supposed to say there? You know, we kind of wanted to win tonight. But now that you've told me it's the one-year anniversary, well, damn it, full speed ahead.
It's on.
Now, what's he going to say in the locker room? Guys, if you were wondering why we should win tonight, 1 year to the day they clinched here. Are we really at that point? I'm sure he maybe heard about it.
I don't think that's a bad question because he's looking for a specific quote.
Sure.
So you want to ask the question so that you can get the quote that you're looking for. And regardless of what the answer is, it's a good quote.
But we all know that, or do we all know, am I just off here, that is there really added motivation there? And at this point,
it is added motivation.
It's a clinching game of the finals.
There was an article I read recently about him talking about how bad it was when they lost last year and he couldn't sleep, how much he thought about. You cannot tell me, I'm calling complete bullcrap, that he does not know the day that it happened.
You may be right. That is a separate point. You may be right.
I don't think there's anything, though, that you could possibly pile on top of. This is game 6 of the NBA Finals, and it's an elimination game.
In your hometown.
Right. Like, there's nothing more that's going to add more pressure to that, whether it's having lost last year on the exact same day. And there's nothing.
I don't think it's a thing about adding pressure. I think it's a thing about adding motivation.
Do
you need more motivation? I understand the question. But listen, we talk about bulletin board material all the time. In essence, you don't need any of that anyway. You should go in as a competitor in any sport. You should go into whatever game it is, whether or not it's a preseason game or an NBA Finals game, and want to win. You're a paid professional that gets paid to go out and win games.
Yeah.
It shouldn't matter one way or the other.
We're all in agreement on that.
So here's the thing that kills me, though. I saw this yesterday, and I was just like, this fan should be taken out and, you know, tarred and feathered, because this is the worst thing. We can talk about Kevin Love and what he does or does not contribute to the Cavs, and if that was a good trade or not, because they gave up a lot to bring Kevin Love to build a win-now team and the super team with Kyrie and Kevin Love and LeBron James. A fan started a GoFundMe page to raise $10 million, which is basically, you know, in essence, part. I don't think it's Kevin Love's full salary this
year. Is it the buyout, though?
I feel like, yeah, it's like for him to sit out of game 6. That is it's a Cleveland fan. It kills me. That is the worst thing. I try to put myself in that, because athletes today, holy cow, they hear everything about their performance, whether it's good or bad. LeBron had an amazing game 5 performance. And guess what? People are like, well, why can't he do it all the time? That you're under so much scrutiny. To have someone actually be that guy and go out and start a GoFundMe page. And last I checked, it was like $25 had been raised.
Yeah, it was $25.
Yeah.
32 minutes grand total in the two games the Warriors have won, or excuse me, the Cavs have won.
Cavs have won.
He's played 32 minutes and scored 2 points with 3 boards and an assist.
But here's the reality, and we'll talk to Brian about this.
Sure.
It has a little bit to do with matchups, don't you think? Is Kevin Love just a big turd, or is this just a really bad team for him to match up?
Yes. Well, let's ask Brian. Let's ask Brian, NBA insider analyst for NBA Radio. You can check him out on the Twitter machine at Hoops Critic. That's easy to remember. It's Brian Geltzeiler. Brian, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thanks again for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are we doing? Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
we were just talking about, Katie brought up the GoFundMe campaign started by a Cleveland fan. $25 raised, as we saw last night, for Kevin Love to not play in Game 6. So the question we were just debating, Brian, is well, I'll put it like Katie did. Is Kevin Love a big turd, or is this just a bad matchup for him?
This is a bad matchup for him. And listen, I feel bad for Kevin Love. And it's hard for me to say, you know, a guy that's got a $110 million contract, but I go with a poor guy, you know. But he's getting bagged on so badly. And listen, I will tell you guys, and this is not revisionist history for me. Anybody that was with me at the time will tell you, I went bonkers on how bad the Wiggins for Love trade was for Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Just because James's best position on the floor has been the four. That's what, when he had his best moments with the Heat and was winning titles, he was playing the four. And you bring in a guy who only can play the four, you know you're going to have trouble at certain points in time, especially with a league that's trending small and Love, who can't play center. So,
and plays no defense.
Well, that's part of the reason. But again, Katie, he can be a big-time player in the right context. Mm-hmm. If you put him at power forward next to one of these Whiteside, Biombo, you know, Tyson Chandler, you know, one of these big-time defensive rim-protecting centers, and you can hide him mm-hmm. on the defensive end of the floor and run a lot of your offense through him, the guy could still be a big-time player. The problem is that's not going to happen here. It will not happen at all here. So it's a problem for him. But I also feel like the guy's busting his backside to try to play a role he's so not suited to play. He's not a ditch digger. He's, you know, Chris Bosh had this, and it's funny, Chris Bosh said the same thing I did when that trade was made, by the way. He said it's very hard to alter your role after being a lead guy to play with LeBron, and he was able to do it. A big reason, because he's such an incredible athlete and could transition into being a center and was okay with a ditch-digging role because he was a very good defensive player. For Love, he can't do that. It's really hard for him to do. He's trying. You know, to bag out on the other night because he had 2 points and three rebounds. Listen, the three rebounds, he's got to obviously get after the ball more. But he was trying to stay in good position defensively. And keep one thing in mind about Kevin Love. You know, the years of averaging 13 rebounds a game, a lot of those rebounds came because he was abandoning defensive possessions early to go get in position or rebound. So it came at a price. Here, he didn't do that the other night. I mean, not that he was a great defensive player. He never will be. But he didn't get caught out of position all that often. And he was busting his butt trying. And offensively, you know, the joke I've been making all week, guys, is like the movie Meatballs with Bill Murray. Feet Fink. He's hot man. You know, you had Kyrie and LeBron going crazy. Kevin Love just had to stay out of the way. So people have said to me, hey, how can Cleveland's they're not going to get Irving and James to get 82 combined again to be able to carry Cleveland to another win here. And that's probably true. However, I don't think it's a stretch to say you can have Irving, James, and Love get 84 combined and have a chance to win. I just don't think Love's going to keep doing this. And by the way, while I'm on it, guys, I didn't love LeBron's public comments about Kevin's got to do more. You know what? If you're looking at what Kevin Love's doing, the effort level is there. What he really and he's not playing with a lot of confidence. He needs a little bit of a boost of confidence. The message should have been more of, we have faith in Kevin. We know that he's going to do a heck of a lot more on the offensive end if the opportunities are given to him. I just kind of feel like LeBron may have picked the wrong time to try to place a little public pressure on him.
Well, and the thing that kills me, Brian, is the fact that whether it's his teammates like LeBron or you look at the media or fans who want to rip on him and say that he needs to do more, or that he's garbage, that I don't care what the narrative is. The fact is, do we have such a short memory to look at his numbers? Like, he had a great regular season. He's averaging nearly, you know, before the series started, I believe it was like 17 and just under 10 rebounds a game. Is that not what you want from him? You don't need him to be your leading scorer. That's what you got LeBron for. You want him to be a complimentary player next to Kyrie and LeBron. Isn't that what he's done?
Yeah, Katie, I totally agree. I think he's last year, the sulking, the bad body language, I didn't approve any of that. I agree with you. I thought this year he embraced the role in the way that he wanted to embrace the role. He watched the NBA Finals last year pretty much as a spectator and understood what it's all about, had some kind of epiphany about being a team player, and has been a team player to the best of his ability this year. They're asking him to do something he's just not good at, and he's trying his hardest to be able to do that. And I agree. I thought he played really well in the regular season. This is a bad matchup for him. But here's the thing. A lot of premium competition, I think OKC would have been a bad matchup for him.
Yeah.
I think San Antonio would have been a bad matchup for him. I think against teams that you can't – it is so – listen, Kyrie Irving's an essential part of what they do. They need that creative shot-making on the floor as much as they can. He's a special offensive player. He's a stub defensively, a big, fat Zilcho. So is Love. You can't have two Zilchos on the floor defensively playing against the best competition the league has to offer. You know, pick me a Tuesday night in February, you know, against the Phoenix Suns, and you're fine with those two on the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're not gonna be that way in the conference finals and the finals against premium competition. It's just too difficult, and that's a big part of the problem with Love right now. You know, and guys, I'll tell you this: there is a change of scenery. We've heard the term before. There may be no player we've ever seen in the history of the league that'll benefit more from a change of scenery than Kevin Love right now.
Brian Geltzeiler of NBA Radio joining us on KHTK. Well, I'm sticking with that. Regardless of how this series ends for both Kevin Love and the Cavs, you know, because this is happening at the very end of the season, we're going to hear all offseason, is Kevin Love a good fit? What do the Cavs have to do to end this speculation? Is it just a matter of getting to next season and having him play well again?
Yeah, or trade him.
Yeah.
I think that's going to end the speculation pretty quickly.
Yeah, no kidding.
Listen, I don't think they're going to win this series. I think they could win tonight and bring it to a game seven, but I don't think they're going to win this series. And if they don't win the series, I think you're going to trade them. Listen, they could win this series and trade them anyway. Because James said something at the middle of the season, guys, that I thought was very interesting. And at this stage, it's kind of fallen under the radar. Love missed a few games. And LeBron James was publicly campaigning to bring Joe Johnson in after Johnson was waived by the Nets or was bought out by the Nets. And as we saw, Johnson ended up in Miami. But LeBron talked about the fact, I'd be happy to play the four so Johnson could come here and play the three. And oh, by the way, yeah, Kevin could play some five. We know Kevin can't play the five. LeBron knows that Kevin can't play the five. But LeBron pushed that Wiggins trade with the thought that he was going to be a small forward for the rest of his career. The rest of us knew something a little bit different. He is a four. He's at his best at the four. That's where he should play. That epiphany has reached LeBron James. He understands that's where he needs to be. So if you're James, you want to go out and get some perimeter help. You know, one of the things to look at in this series, Ty Lue has not, he for a very short time, he used the James at center unit, and they got eaten alive. And one of the reasons they got eaten alive is they don't have enough perimeter size. They don't have enough length on the perimeter. And I think they're going to go trade Kevin Love somewhere to get themselves a longer perimeter player that can hold his own for them while James plays the four. And James, I think, will convert to a full-time four going into next season. And I think, listen, I think that could very well happen if they win the title. It's definitely happening if they don't win the title.
NBA radio analyst Brian Geltzeiler joining us on The Drive. Brian, Draymond Green said yesterday, had he played in Game 5, it would be over now. In your opinion, was Draymond Green correct?
No. I think it would have been a closer game. They got beat by 16, you know. I mean, I think it would have been a closer game. But I also think it's a very dangerous attitude for the Golden State Warriors to say, hey, all we really needed was Draymond and everything would have been fine. Their defense was bad. Their transition defense was really bad, really bad. And with, you know, the problem that happens with Golden State sometimes, we saw it rear its ugly head in the Portland series. We saw it become a problem early on in the OKC series, is because they switch so seamlessly, they forget to help. And just because you're switching doesn't mean guys don't get beat sometimes. So their help defense was very, very weak in that game. That's up and down the line across the board. It has to be strengthened. It's a simple concept. See the man, see the ball. They get away from that because of the switching sometimes. What made it even more difficult was obviously not having Green hurts it because he's probably their best help defender. Bogut's their second best help defender, and losing Bogut was very tough. And listen, losing Bogut's going to make things a little tougher for Golden State tonight just because if I'm Ty Lue, I continue to do what I did in Game 5. And guys, I've killed Ty Lue. If you follow my Twitter feed, I've killed Ty Lue all season. I thought he coached a tremendous game in terms of not allowing and Kerr to put him into the small ball trap mm-hmm. and stayed with his big guys, slowed the tempo so it worked. And again, that's going to be something Kerr's going to throw at him tonight, but it's a little tougher because Draymond Green is the guy, the linchpin in that small ball lineup. So he's going to throw that out there. But if you're Lou, you still want to draw a big on the floor. Why do you want to do that? Because he doesn't have a big to put out there. He's going to have to go to Anderson Varejao. And all due respect to Anderson Varejao, with his hard work and his energy and his hustle and his flopping, he is an inferior athlete on the floor in this series. And if you're Ty Lue and you can fish Anderson Varejao out on the floor, or Festus Ezeli, who's been a dumpster fire in this series, if you can make Kerr have to do that, you got a leg up there. So all of a sudden, where this coaching matchup wasn't such a chess match, Kerr was destroying him early on. Ty Lue learned a lot on the fly. He's got his coaching chops going here. Going to be very interesting to see what happens. But for the Warriors, it comes back to they need to help better defensively. They need to get back in transition a lot more than they did in Game 5.
Brian Geltzeiler of NBA Radio, an analyst and insider, joining us this morning on The Drive. I've got to ask you this question. We've talked so much about it. I feel like this final series has been a soap opera. We've talked about Draymond Green and all of this stuff with the junk punching and kicking and all of these things and suspensions and what would happen if not. Why in the world, though, would J.R. Smith add to this by coming out and saying right now, before anything is before the season's even wrapped up, that he will not pick up his player option next year? Go ahead.
Katie, JR is going to JR. That's what he does. Okay. My guess is this. I got to figure he's not so happy. And I don't know this for a fact, but this would only be what explained this timing. JR is not so happy that he was kept on the bench with five fouls and Amon Shumpert finished that game. It was the right call. It's a call that needs to be made more tonight, because especially if they're going to play Love more, they need a defensive player in that backcourt. And I thought Shumpert's defense on Klay Thompson in the fourth quarter was very good. Very good. And Shumpert, if you remember last year in the finals, he shut down Klay Thompson. So I think you're going to see much more Shumpert than J.R. Smith tonight. And I think the writing's on the wall for J.R. Smith. And I think he figures maybe he can force somebody's hands a little bit by deciding, hey, let's just leak this right now and see if they're going to value me more. It's an ego play by J.R. That's my best bet. But listen, this is when you know... It's the old adage, guys. You buy a house on a golf course. You can't be outraged when golf balls come flying through your windows. You go ahead and you sign J.R. Smith to be on your team, and he does something or says something ridiculous at an inopportune time. You know, sometimes you get what you pay for.
Brian, we always, always appreciate your time. You can check Brian Geltzeiler out at Hoops Critic on NBA Radio and many, many other forms of communication. Thanks. Enjoy the series, and I'm sure we'll talk to you this summer.
Guys, always my pleasure. I look forward to it. Take care.
You too.
Thank you.
He's got an announcery voice. You know that?
I love him. He's
phenomenal.
Insight. Yeah.
He's phenomenal. That much energy this early. He's because smart as hell.
I did not realize, I didn't put it all together. I forgot about LeBron James talking about bringing Joe Johnson there and saying, oh, yeah, I can play the four. Kevin Love can play. Yeah, no, he can't. We all know that. LeBron is not stupid, but one of the things that will
He's a terrible GM.
That's what I'm saying. This will always be a hit on his record. I think more than any other player in NBA history, and I kind of blame this on Cleveland because they were so happy to get him back, that they let him have too much leeway in mm-hmm. terms of not the first time that he said publicly, like, oh, I want such and such player, I would have pulled him aside and said, hey, you can talk to us about it. We can have an open conversation about it. But the moment that you start talking moves and decisions with the media is when things are going to go all kinds of south.
Well, here's my question.
He's forcing their hand, and that is not what any player should have the power to do.
Well, here's my question for both of you. Because that seems to be the general consensus about LeBron James, and I get it. But he's literally done the second best thing you could possibly do, and he's on the verge, and he's favored to take arguably the greatest team of all time to seven games. Even if he loses, it's the second best possible thing he could do, and he lost to maybe the greatest team of all time. So is he that bad of a GM?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think there's an argument on the other side. I really do. It's the second best result possible.
Yeah, well, could they not have a better result maybe if we weren't talking about Kevin Love and his price tag and being a donut right now?
Probably.
Okay.
But then there's other things that probably have worked out. My whole point
is this. Oh, yeah, right. Like Mo Williams getting big minutes in the playoffs.
No.
Or like that big Joe Johnson signing that never happened. Maybe that was one of them. James Jones is rotting on the bench. Rasul Butler has made a living rotting on the bench.
Yeah, he stood up
James's
and wanted
bench.
Tristan Thompson to re-sign J.R. Smith in there.
J.R. Smith, good one.
J.R. Smith, though, is a key to the team, though. I mean, he is a key to the
team.
From
the bench and their biggest win this year.
But when the key to your team is a nutcase.
True.
And can go either way.
A key, not the key. LeBron James is the key, and Kyrie Irving is the key. And Tristan Thompson, a lot of people wanted, thought he was too expensive. LeBron James pushed for that.
How about Shabazz Napier? He was a great draft pick, and LeBron decided to saddle the heat with him and then bounce. That was a good call.
It's not a perfect record. My point is, he's lost two finals in six games and probably seven games to one of the greatest teams to ever play the game.
But here's the thing we'll never know.
Uh-huh.
What would have happened if he would have let the people do their jobs that are actually paid to make those decisions?
We'll take a break. We'll come back. The Baylor story is rearing its ugly head. We'll step back and let Katie mix it up next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.
Thanks, I'm Dave. Very nice to meet. Dave, what do you do? You can call me dog. Let me just check your shit.
Hey.
No problem,
this
sir.
Is my guy. This is my guy. I love Jay. I can't lie. I've been thinking about
this all day. Lil Dicky. I knew who it was the moment it started.
Graduated summa cum laude from the University of Richmond, and I just discovered him 2 days ago. And save your texts.
Speak for yourself. All a cum laude where I'm come from. Right?
I'm sure he's been around as I roll right over that one.
Uh-huh.
Sure, he's been around a long time, and I'm also sure. Well, I put it up on Facebook and Twitter. Where's this guy been my whole life? And almost every response was, "Oh, you're just hearing about Lil. He just freestyled on this show and this." And then the other one was, "No, dude, you got to check out this song and this song and this song. That song's okay, but this." And I appreciate that.
Isn't that the worst with music?
He is the sharks of your music fandom.
Every time you discover something new with music, there's that part of you that's like, "Oh my god, this is so rad! I need to share it with everybody."
Yes.
And then you're like, "Wait a minute! Like everyone probably knows about this because in your case, and now I'm going to put this to me, but it's like." Dude, like, I'm a 30-year-old dope that spends more time playing FIFA than I do at work. Like, I'm probably not the first person to find this song.
Sure.
I can't possibly be that cool. And so, like, it takes a bit of boldness to actually step out
you
and
don't
share.
Say it.
Right. So when you do, and then you get crapped all over, everyone's like, dude.
Yeah, dude. It's been around. Come on. Hey, guess what? The Beatles broke up. Breaking news.
Hello.
And on top,
it's not music? Like you, it's not like you tweeted out an Adele song and was like, "Oh my God, where has she been?
Where's she been my whole
this
life?
This is so she has. Have you guys heard of her? She's so amazing." No, Lil Dicky is not that popular. I'm sorry, it's like it's not the same.
This Paul McCartney guy. Join Sports 1140 for live on the Boulevard tonight, 6:30. Stephen Young Amphitheater, or I just realized it could also be the Steve Young Amphitheater in El Dorado Hills Town Center. It's a free concert, guys, featuring Peace Frog. It's a tribute to the Doors. More information, visit ElDoradoHillsTownCenter.com. It's kind of how I felt this morning when we unveiled our Dave Chappelle Show musical, Nate. Somebody's already thought about it. Katie, there's stuff on her mind, and it needs to be expressed, and we want to hear it. This is Mix It Up with Katie Christensen.
Everyone loves a good deal.
What is your cholesterol level?
Especially when it comes from the heart.
I assume it's awesome, since the alcohol constantly flushes it out of my veins.
Let's mix it up with Katie Christensen.
One shop, you're going to love my nuts.
That's you.
One shop. I'm going to love your nuts.
What's flapping your gums today,
well,
kid?
Well, I mean, there's so many stories in sports that, and it's the big ones, and this one specifically talking about everything that has gone down at Baylor with the sexual assault and covering it up and the football team. And we've been covering this story for a while now, but there is news as it's continuing to progress and come out. And Monday, the Board of Regents was set to vote, as it was reported, on the fact that many key donors were asking for Art Briles to receive a one-year suspension and not be permanently removed as the head coach of the football team. And of course, later on in the week, it comes out that that was not at all what that board was meeting to vote on. They did not vote on it on Monday. But the interesting thing is, when you talk about key donors, it's a small minority of key donors, quote, small minority. Let's talk about who some of these people are. Bob Simpson. Do you guys know who Bob Simpson is?
Does
that,
really
that name ring a bell to you?
It does.
He is the co-owner of the Texas Rangers. Okay.
Oh, him.
And apparently he is he's good friends. He's very close to Art Briles. And his quote was, "We don't know yet if he'll return. We'd like to see that happen." okay? And then you've got a former board chairman, Gail Galloway, coming out and saying he's one of the finest men I've known. He certainly deserves to be reinstated.
No.
You don't think so?
I disagree.
This is all happening on Monday. Fast forward to just yesterday, Wednesday, hump day, as we'd like to call it. And yes. This is why this is a really bad joke. Because three women, in addition to what we already know about the whole thing that went down at Baylor, have come out and filed lawsuits. This is a really horrible thing to get into. Claiming that they were sexually assaulted by members of the football team. They're set to file lawsuits against the school. Now, these three women, one of them became a student in January of 2014. She claims to have been assaulted by a Baylor football player in April of 2014. She reported to the school physician. She went in for an exam, reported what happened, said that she was misinformed, and they concealed her options to further report the incident and what other accommodations she could have at her disposal to further investigate the actions against said player. Jane Doe, too, was sexually assaulted at the school after she enrolled in 2004. So this is going back some time. The third woman that has come out was a student in August of 2012, all claiming to have been sexually assaulted and not given the option to report or was not investigated as it should be. But yet, as it continues to go on, we still have people like Bob Simpson coming out and saying that, no, he's a very good man. 1 year suspension should be enough for these egregious claims of how he has covered things up allegedly and inserted himself into the investigation, which is just mind-boggling. But my question is for you guys. Baylor is a Christian university. And I'll go as far as to say that if this happened at any university, I don't care, you know, public, Christian, I don't care if it has any religious affiliation at all. It's still a horrible, awful thing that has happened. But if this were like a Notre Dame or a BYU, do you think this would be a bigger story? Or would it be something that we were talking about like, oh, this is awful? You wouldn't have donors coming out saying, oh, you know, he's a good guy. 1 year suspension should be sufficient.
Well, I think it's disgusting no matter where it is. And without pitting Mormons versus Christians versus Catholics, which... That's kind of what that question is doing.
No, I don't mean it that way, just to clarify.
Right. I don't think there is a major college football program in the country that wouldn't handle this the same way.
That's the thing. That's the question. It doesn't really matter, but if it were a more publicly religious school, to me, I don't care. But others are saying, okay, this is a religious school. How egregious that they're trying to cover these things up. No, I think this comes down to college football.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way of obscuring the real issue, which has nothing to do with the basis of the university. It's the system of college athletics in general. The fact that you could even, I mean, this is right. It has nothing to do with religious affiliations, public, private, no. And that's anyone that's saying that is trying to throw a red herring at you.
What is worse, the hypocrisy in the fact that this is a Christian university that has seemed to cover
it up on every single level,
or that it's the hypocrisy of college sports?
You know, what makes this worse is that the people that deflect it to that, to the religious or the, right. You know, the private institution element. What you're saying is that you're basically writing it off. Mm-hmm. You're saying, hey, this doesn't happen in other places. Look at the bad private school over there trying to cover all things up as hypocrites. This doesn't happen. Only these guys do that.
The problem.
You're trying to pigeonhole a problem that is much more widespread, and you're trying to write. It's like saying that every person that's a mass shooter has mental problems. Right. Like, yeah, but let's look a little bit further into it than that.
Right.
The issue is these girls are expendable. That's the problem. They don't matter.
Right.
The girls don't matter.
That's the message.
Because if you're winning and the alumni is happy and you're making money, then the wins justify the means.
Yep.
So if you're going to bring in these recruits and you're going to give them the run of the city and of the campus, and you're going to tell them how great they are, and when you're recruiting them, you're going to have hot co-eds seducing them, quote unquote, I say that facetiously, is this entire thing is facetious. You are ingraining a culture that is has long stood in college football, especially, but in other sports, where the ends do justify the means. The problem is Baylor got caught. This is the typical, I'm sorry for cheating on you, wife. No, you're not. You're sorry for getting caught. Mm-hmm. You're not sorry for cheating. You're sorry for getting caught.
I only did it the one time.
Now, does that mean that Art Briles supports sexual assault? Does that mean Kenna Starr supports sexual assault? I don't know. I don't know what was in their heart. But at the very, very best, the best, best case scenario for them is that they were criminally negligent and turned the other cheek. And whether it's Joe Paterno and young kids, whether it's Art Briles and women, they're not expendable. None of them are expendable. That's it. White, black, woman, young boy, period, end of statement. Florida State for years had a culture where Bobby Bowden turned the other cheek. Jimbo Fisher has turned the other cheek. Whether it's
the Tallahassee Police Department turns the other cheek.
This is
you
all
go
over.
On and on and on and on and on.
This is all over in college sports. And I think one of the most troubling things about this story as it continues to develop is I talked to you about the three Jane Does.
Yes.
Two of them were fairly recently, 2014 and 2012. But one of the alleged victims, 2004, is when her assault happened.
It was 12 years ago.
Yes. And so to me, and I'm not making light of this. The first thing that came to mind for me is this story is developing to be kind of very similar to the Bill Cosby allegations and things that are coming, where there's just victims coming out of the woodworks now. Because when you continually cover up something, as it appears that this might have been what was going on in Baylor, people that are victimized do not feel safe or heard coming out. So they bottle it up. They deal with it. They don't tell anybody. And it takes one person coming out and finally getting recognized. I truly feel like there's going to be more that develops in this story.
We'll continue this when we get back and wrap up the show. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Man, I thought this was a commercial.
I did too.
This is an American Tale.
Just let you go on
well, this
that.
Is perfect. This is a perfect somewhere lead-in song. There. Couple things. We've got two pair, I should say, of tickets. Call right now, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We'll take the 11th and 12th callers. They'll each get a pair of tickets to the special Wingstop Soundstage appearance by Terrell Owens. This Friday afternoon, you'll enjoy some delicious wings, courtesy of Wingstop. Winners will also watch a live interview with Terrell Owens in the Wingstop soundstage and a meet and greet after.
A little T.O. action.
A little T.O. action
well,
for you.
Well, meet and greet, yeah, because if you've ever been here, it's not like the soundstage or studio or whatever.
It's not an amphitheater.
It's not very big. You're going to be like 5 feet away from the guy the whole time.
I'm excited. I'm going to come back to work.
Me
That's
too.
That's the second greatest receiver ever.
I agree with you. I heard you on the air saying that the other day, and I agree with you. And should have been first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8:53. Time to save at Hot Tub Supercenter. Call 315-TUBS or visit JacuzziSacramento.com. To your question, you were asking during your segment about what's his face with the Rangers and if his name
rung
a bell. And it got me thinking, there was a guy not too long ago, you mentioned Notre Dame, mm-hmm. and there's a bell tower at Notre Dame that rings on the hours, you know. And so being the bell ringer is a big, big deal.
Right. Disney made a whole movie about it.
Exactly. So there was a gentleman who did not have use of his arms that tried out to be the bell ringer. And what he did was he applied for it, and they were like, well, how are you going to ring the bell? And so what he did, he said, I'll show you. So he took a run up at the bell tower, and he jumped up, and he headbutted the bell, and it was dong, right? Mm-hmm. So they said, okay, let me see that again. So he took another rung, and he jumped up and rang the bell again. Then they said, you do it one more time, you can do it. So he ran up, he did the same thing, but he fell out of the bell tower.
No.
Yeah, so then they were doing the police report and everything, and they said, well, first off, let me get his name. And the guy in charge said, well, I don't know what his name was, but his face rings a bell.
Hey-o!
You're so stupid.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you hear me? I was like, no.
Nope, that was good.
That was the best part. Katie was legitimately
she
into
was
that. How long till you knew where that was going? Had you heard that one
very
before?
End. No.
The very
no,
end?
No, I'd heard the punchline before, but yep. Well, I was too busy looking up the name of Quasimodo. Got to be honest on that one.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, Disney did a whole movie on it. Let me get on the Google and find out what this guy's name was. Hey,
really? His face rings a bell? What? Well, that's coincidental. Alonzo Mourning.
I'm disappointed because I had a great opportunity to laugh at a guy with no arms, and I sat on it because I thought it was a true story.
I didn't even say no arms. See, the joke is no arms, and I was trying to be politically correct.
You said no arms.
I said he didn't have use of his arms. Uh-oh. I didn't explain specifically why. So I was trying to clean the joke up a little bit.
Never mind. Just not having them as opposed to not having
them. There isn't enough Clorox wipes in the world to clean up anything we do in here. Look at you running around the studio, Nate.
I don't have use. I still got them.
That Harlem shake in the studio.
Oh, my God.
I'm like a marionette.
They just play us off at the end of the show. All right, thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Oh my word.
I hope we don't get fired. The malice at the Palace is one of the uglier moments in NBA history. Just a quick update on this. You all know the Detroit and Indiana. There's an update just in the sense that our good friend Ron Artest reiterated again that the guy that he full-on slugged in the whole thing, John Green, they remain not only close friends to this day, but talk almost every day. That's kind of neat that Ron reached out
to him.
That's
because Ron is the best.
He really is.
It's indisputable.
He reached out to him many, many years ago. In fact, we tried to fly him.
Because he wants to make peace.
Yes, Meta World.
Mm-hmm.
Meta World peace. Our thanks to Brian Geltzeiler for stooping to our level and coming on the program earlier today. Jay Johnson, as always, kills it behind the glass. And Nate, good your return today.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you back.
That means old Granty Napes is going to be back this afternoon. Good for him. And we'll wrap up everything tomorrow with our beautiful Friday program.
Flashback Friday.
For the hair-bunned Katie Christensen, for the bearded Nate Goodyear, Jay Johnson. I'm Carmichael Dave. 6 a.m. tomorrow. We'll be back. It's The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.